is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
That song gets me every time. I am so pumped to be here with you all. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us once again for your Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Today is the 11th day of the 11th month of 2014, and we are zooming right along here, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if any of you have noticed, and by you, I'm speaking to most of you in the middle of the country, but it is cold, cold, cold outside. I mean cold. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't care for it. I'm not going to lie. This whole cold thing, you can keep it. I'm over it. But it has happened. This polar vortex thing that everybody was predicting does seem to have arrived today in the middle of the country in Missouri, and the temperature is very low. I think if it was not winter yesterday, it is officially winter right now. I hope wherever you are prepared just in case things do get out of control this week. I'm not suggesting that it will. However, Michio Kaku thinks that it very well may. He had a startling interview on CNBC, I think, yesterday, talking about all heck breaking loose in the center of the country this week, given the polar vortex. And I'll tell you, we talked a little bit this last week about the spraying campaigns that have been going on, and I really think that those things are connected, and the clouds are thick and full here today, but no airplanes that I can see. So who knows, maybe they got in front of this thing and got everything accomplished that they wanted to get accomplished. I don't know. We'll see if we get some snow out of the deal, I guess. So anyway, this is your Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 11th day of the 11th month. And my name is JD. We do this every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, from 10 until noon. The first hour we spend kind of going over the latest news from around the world and around your community, try and keep everybody up to date on what we feel is the most important thing. And we have a fantastic team at Red Pill Reports doing exactly that, bringing you fresh and unique content to the website every day. I want to pause for just a second and thank everyone who has visited the site and who is sharing it with their friends. The website seems to be doing very well, and it's our commitment to you to have fresh content on there every single day, so you have new things to look at, and cannot appreciate all of you enough. Those of you who have sent wonderful emails of support, just again, very overwhelming, very nice, very thankful to be here and part of the Truth Frequency Radio family, reminding everybody again that it is a listener-supported network, and if we can all go out and make small donations between all of us, we will continue to be the top of the heap in terms of alternative news. Speaking of alternative news, we do the first hour of news from around the world, and then the second hour, we always have a guest. We have a guest on that we feel like will bring information to you that you're not going to get anyplace else. And ladies and gentlemen, today is not going to be an exception. We will be interviewing Roger Sales at the 11 o'clock hour. Now, he is an author and a radio talk show host as well, but he is one of the world's foremost experts on the sovereignty movement, on the your full understanding of how you're supposed to be relating to other people in this country, what the real concepts of liberty are, what it really means to be a sovereign, how they have changed the language to obfuscate the truth, to make us, well, to make us slaves, ladies and gentlemen. And this is a subject that most talk show hosts are not going to ever touch, because it is fundamentally the truth, and it is fundamentally very frightening once you understand how bamboozled we have been. So I look forward to speaking with Roger in the 11 o'clock hour. I hope all of you stick with us for that discussion, because it is one of my very favorite topics of discussion, and we'll try and separate some of the truth from the chaff today. as it were. I want to mention also, given the polar vortex and Michio Kaku's prediction that things might go very bad this week, probably a good time to be thinking about prepping, making sure all your supplies for the winter are stocked up. And in that vein, we will be joined tomorrow by Miss Erin Dakins. Now, she is a prepping expert extraordinaire, and so we look forward to speaking with her and finding out everything we can that we might not already know at this point. So we are going to jump forward into the news here, and there are literally hundreds of major stories from around the world right now. First and foremost, on the international front, coming out of London, a London-based think tank said yesterday that Russian forces have been involved with dozens of close encounters with Western militaries since Moscow annexed Crimea, and that both sides are now risking losing control of the events. The study was done by the European Leadership Network, offered details on 40 different incidents, and said that they add up to a very disturbing pattern over a wide geographic area. Now, of course, this could be more of the jumping on the Putin bandwagon. They're doing everything they can to keep this issue up in the air, you know, the threat of Putin. But this report singled out three specific incidents in the last 8 months of being particularly high risk: a near collision between an SAS civilian airliner and a Russian surveillance plane, and the abduction of an Estonian intelligence officer and a Swedish submarine hunt. So all of these things are top of the list in terms of what this London-based think tank believes are major incidents of Russian aggression and things that are pushing us towards a new global Cold War, so to speak. And the report also detailed Russian aircraft encounters with the U.S. military, including an incident on April 12th this year in which an unarmed Russian fighter aircraft repeatedly buzzed the U.S. Cook in the Black Sea. In June, two F-22 fighters were scrambled after a pair of Russian bombers were spotted 50 miles off the coast of California, and tensions have been high since Russia's annexation of the Crimean Peninsula from Ukraine back in March. NATO in October said its pilots have conducted over 100 intercepts of Russian aircraft this year, which is about three times as many as last year. So more Putin, NATO, U.S. Turmoil going on, and follows on the heels of several prominent leaders from around the world discussing the potential of us slipping back into another Cold War. I would argue to say that we're probably already there right now, but it remains to be seen what happens going forward. News out of the Middle East is kind of unnerving right now as Iran tests the first U.S. drone copy. Now, a lot of people probably remember that the RQ-170 Sentinel, which was a UAV owned by our military, was seized 3 years ago after it entered Iranian airspace coming over from Afghanistan. And Tehran says now that it has managed to reverse engineer the drone and is ready now for its own unmanned aerial vehicle production. Tehran says it has seized several U.S. drones in recent years and an Israeli one back in August, which was another U.S. Boeing Scan Eagle being among them. And they are saying now that they have copied all of them and they're ready to enter into production with drones. So does that make the world a safer place over there? I don't think so, but that is what's happening now. We lose a drone, they reverse engineer it, and they're going to start going. Iran has now published a plan to eliminate Israel, and this happened yesterday. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei published on Sunday, a 9-step plan to eliminate Israel, prompting Israel's Prime Minister to file a formal complaint with Western negotiators involved in nuclear talks with Tehran. Obviously, the situation between Iran and Israel is remaining very, very hot right now. And Khamenei's official Twitter account on Sunday tweeted out the 9-step plan, explaining the proper way of eliminating Israel. One of the things he does say is that he is only concerned with removing the fake Zionist regime that is ahead of Israel. It has nothing to do with the massacre of Jewish people or disruption in the region, but Iran still chomping at the bit to get rid of the Zionists in Israel. Cannot really agree with that more than I already do. Iran and the West have ended their round of nuclear talks, and the results are, as usual, completely unclear. Iran and the United States and the European Union ended 2 days of high-level talks on Tehran's nuclear program on Monday, with no immediate sign that they had bridged gaps ahead of the November 24th deadline for an agreement. A senior Iranian official told Reuters that minimal progress was made in the talks in Oman. After hours of talks, he said, we have not made any progress whatsoever. Still differences remain, and we still have gaps over issues. In Washington, State Department spokesman Jen Psaki said the talks among Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Zarif and the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and U.N. Envoy Catherine Ashton had been tough, direct, and serious. She didn't give any further details, but said that they were continuing to chip away at very challenging issues. I would believe that for Jen Psaki, tying your shoes would be a very challenging issue. But that's just my own aside. No offense, Jen, if you're listening. Hope you are. Thanks. Okay, moving on. Spain has got some turmoil going on right now coming out of Barcelona, and Catalonia's nationalist government prepared Monday to step up its secession drive after more than 2 million people voted in a symbolic independence referendum, which Spain's central government dismisses as quote-unquote useless. The head of the Catalan regional government, Arthur Mas, said Sunday's vote, which was ordered blocked by the Constitutional Court at Madrid's request, he called it a total success after the overwhelming majority of those who took part supported independence. The people of Catalonia have made it very clear, he said, that we want to govern ourselves. It is an old aspiration which dates back centuries and remains perfectly alive. The Catalonian government said Monday a total of 2.3 million people had taken part in the vote, surpassing its initial estimate of 2.25 million. And despite legal challenges and objections from the central government, but the vast majority who took part in this vote, which was 80.7%, voted for independence. So, more moves around the world as people are standing up and throwing off the chains of these oppressive governments that are run based on nothing, based on competition and scarcity and profit, all of which are constructs of man. And it is encouraging to me to see these populations of the world stepping up and doing what they should be doing to get this out. ISIS has released a master plan for war against Pakistan. Apparently, ISIS has created a 10-man strategic planning wing with a master plan on how to wage war against the Pakistani military and is trying to join forces with local militants, according to the government memo obtained by NBC News. They are planning to inflict casualties to Pakistan army outfits who are taking part in the Operation Zarb-e-Azb, which is referring to the military operation against Pakistani Taliban and other militants that was launched back in June in a tribal region near the Afghan border. I'll tell you, if you guys are having trouble keeping all of these groups straight in your mind, you are part of the party that I'm in, because I have a lot of trouble figuring out what the agenda is. I mean, if ISIS is really being controlled by United States and Israel, well, Pakistan is supposed to be an ally of the United States, at least. But this document that ISIS has put out suggests that Pakistan is now in the crosshairs, warning that the group aims to stir up sectarian violence and unrest by dispatching the local militant group on offensives against the Pakistani's minority Shiite Muslim community, further destabilizing a country already battling the Taliban and Al-Qaeda extremists. So here we see more Shiite-Sunni turmoil going on, bleeding over into Pakistan. It just seems like the entire Middle East has just completely unraveled in the last 6 months, and I think that that's probably going to continue. In another related story to the Middle East, the U.S. is now imposing sanctions on Yemen's ex-president and two of the rebel leaders there. Yesterday, the United States imposed sanctions on the former president of Yemen, Ali Abdullah Saleh, a one-time American counterterrorism ally. Think about that for a second. He was the former president of Yemen and one-time American counterterrorism ally, whom the Obama administration accused of undermining stability in Yemen, which you can read right through that line, ladies and gentlemen. He was not towing the party line. And so he was forced from power in 2012 after protests against his 33-year rule, but has remained an influential political figure. In a statement from the Treasury Department, they accused Mr. Saleh of being one of the primary supporters of violence. It's so ironic that the state department would accuse someone else of being a primary supporter of violence. Anyway, perpetuated by the Houthis, who is a rebel group that took control of Sana'a, the Yemeni capital, back in September, the Houthi takeover set off a political crisis that has weakened the authority of the current president, Hadi, who is backed by the United updates. So, of course, you can read right through all this right now. He wasn't towing the party line, and he's still not towing the party line, apparently. So now the Obama administration has imposed more sanctions on him and two of his Houthi military leaders. They have frozen assets that Mr. Saleh has or any of these people in terms of the military leaders might have, and are preventing them from doing business with American companies. So the Middle East, a tinderbox. As usual, nothing seems to be changing in that respect, so we will keep you guys up to date as more things happen around the world and happen in the Middle East. Want to jump to our neck of the woods here in the United States right now. There's a few things going on. Obviously, the polar vortex is probably the most significant thing that's going on right now because it does seem to affect everybody. And again, I hope everyone is safe out there. Want to remind everyone again, Aaron Dakins will be on the show tomorrow so we can talk about getting all your winter supplies and your preparatory stuff ready to go just in case it gets colder outside, which I almost couldn't believe if it was going to do that. Moving on to San Francisco, the drought in California is still causing a lot of turmoil out there, and it's getting bad to the point where thieves are now starting to steal water from hydrants. And we're talking right now about Clayton, which is in Contra Costa County, which is a city that kind of remains true to its western roots, although it does now seem to be that that whole county is really devolving into what could be considered the Wild Wild West at this point, with water thefts being happening at night in different neighborhoods, right, you know, under the cover of darkness. So the county is cracking down. They're getting ready to pull the trigger on a new ordinance. It's going to raise the fine for first-time water theft offenders from $25 to $250, and if they're caught a second time, it will be $500. The main concern right now is that these people are taking water from the public water supply, and there's no way to guarantee that they're not going to cross-contaminate the water supply, because all that water just goes back into the population, into the community, so there is danger there. Now, why they don't just put padlocks or something, I guess people could kind of padlock, but there's got to be a way to secure these hydrants in a more fitting fashion than just trying to legislate morality by, you know, putting fines on things. That just doesn't ever work, so you'd have to use technology to solve the problem, people. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, so that's happening in California. Kind of a wild deal out there. News out of the Border Patrol right now from Tucson. Investigators have uncovered that some of the U.S. Border Patrol agents have lost a key part of their arsenal, and that agents who are on patrol along the border are extremely worried about it. Now, this is a report from News 4 in Tucson, and they have learned that the U.S. Customs and Border Protection offices of Border Patrol and Training and Development are inspecting the quality of agents' M4 carbines, which is the rifles that these guys carry, throughout the Border Patrol sectors nationwide. But according to the agents, some of these M4 rifles that they're turning in for inspection are not being replaced. And what we've learned now is that agents are being required to share their rifles amongst each other, which normally isn't too big of a deal, but if you understand the way a rifle works and that, you know, sighting in your rifle is a very specific to a person kind of thing, if you start pooling these weapons, you're really cutting into the efficiency of the weapon in terms of the individual using it. And if these people are supposed to be protecting our border, and if they're charged with protecting one another from anything that happens, they're not going to be able to do it right now, and that is concerning. Customs and Border Patrol released a statement to the news this week saying CBP's offices of Border Patrol and Training and Development are jointly inspecting the serviceable M4 carbines throughout the border sectors nationwide, and some of them have been deemed unserviceable and removed from inventory to alleviate safety concerns. Inspections are going to continue to ensure that unserviceable M4 carbines are repaired or replaced for reintroduction into the field, but no further information is available at this time. We don't have a timeline as to when those rifles are going to be replaced, so definitely some concern going on down at the border, as if we don't have enough concern going on down at the border. I have to draw your attention to a video that surfaced on Friday that I did not get to see that is shocking, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Economist and Obamacare architect Jonathan Gruber, okay? And he said, and this is a direct quote, that lack of transparency and the stupidity of the American voter were critical to passing the president's unpopular health care law. Lack of transparency is a huge political advantage, according to Gruber. He said, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. But basically, that was really, really critical in getting this thing to pass. Are you listening to this? This is the guy who came up with the entire Obamacare architecture program, talking about how it would never have passed if people were not lied to and manipulated, and he's essentially gloating in this video about how proud he is. He says, "I wished that he could make it more transparent, but the bill would not have passed if not for the administration's art of deception on key features of the law." He says the bill was written in a tortured way to make sure CBO did not score the mandate as taxes, Gruber said. He said if you had a law that made it explicitly that healthy people would have to pay in and sick people would get money, there's no way in the world that that would have passed. So he said it was clear that deliberately lying to the American people was a necessary measure in the passage of this Obamacare. He says, I wish things would change, but he says he would rather have the law than not have the law. These are the people that are running our country, ladies and gentlemen. These are the people that are part of the administration that is supposed to be designed to protect us. And here we are now gloating about lying to us. And, I harken back to Nancy Pelosi saying we have to pass the bill to see what's in it. Just ridiculous. The level of ego that comes out of Washington and these administrators these days is second to nothing in the world. So I encourage everyone to go to redpillreports.com and check out the daily link for the show, under which you'll find all of these news articles, and you can go and watch this video. And if he is not saying this stuff with a smile on his face, I will eat my beanie hat, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I'm telling you right now. He is a gloating guy there. News out of Spokane, Washington. I kind of keep up to date on what's going on in Washington. This is my heart lives in Seattle, most people know. And some local gun owners are bracing for trouble after the passage of I-594. We talked about I-594 last week and how many of the higher-ups at Microsoft dumped hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars into trying to get I-594 passing. And a few people now in Spokane believe that the government is out to take their guns and are buying them like crazy. They have seen a 25% increase in gun sales just in the last week. Of course, I-595, his main issue with that is the requirement that background checks be performed on any transfer of gun, whether it was at private or at a gun show or a Craigslist or something like that. Obviously, they don't sell guns on Craigslist, but you get my drift. And people are concerned that there will come a time when, mandatory background checks on firearm purchases are going to be the rule. And so we're seeing that result in a major sale out in Washington State right now. And so that is what's going on out there. The U.S. is now going to notify local police officers when immigrants are freed. Isn't that thoughtful of them? The Homeland Security Department is working on an automated system now to notify state and local authorities when an immigrant with serious criminal history is released into their jurisdictions, according to a letter from a pair of Texas lawmakers. In this letter sent Monday to Acting Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director Thomas Winkowski and Republican Senator John Cornyn and Democrat Republican Beto O'Rourke said they were told about an automated notification system by a senior ICE official in late October, and ICE is also considering adding notifications to victims. Boy, wouldn't that be a scary text to get? By the way, on your phone, you're going to get a text or a tweet that says, by the way, the local government officials have completely dropped the ball, and that guy that was convicted for murdering your spouse is now back on the streets and potentially in your neighborhood. Good luck with all that. I mean, what kind of response is this? Maybe we could, get these people to actually do their jobs. Maybe if there weren't criminals being released onto our streets, we wouldn't have to worry about these stupid automation systems. And I don't believe, again, this is just ridiculous. Back in 2013, ICE released more than 36,000 criminal immigrants who were all facing deportation, including those accounting for 193 homicides and 426 sexual assault convictions. All of the immigrants released from immigration jail had finished their criminal jail sentences, but were still facing deportation and were let go. So, I don't even know what to say about that, ladies and gentlemen. Moving on to an automated system to let people know that the government and the ICE that's supposed to be keeping us safe has dropped the ball, and that's what's going on with that. So, moving on to some economic news right now. The market right now is up about 20 points. It's still sitting well above 17,000. We're at 17,630 right now. Gold still taking a little bit of a drop, down another 0.5% right now to 1154. silver, following suit with about a 0.75% drop to 15.54. Oil continues to be pretty stagnant, although it has dropped a touch, and we're sitting at $77.18. I think we have spoken quite a bit about the suppression of oil and what the goals with that are, but that suppression does seem to be continuing. And for those of you out there who are following Bitcoin, like myself, kind of a flat trade still right now. I'm wondering if we have reached a point of parity with supply and demand and Bitcoin, but Bitcoin right now trading at $363.69. So that is what is happening with the micro economy. We've got a fairly interesting article about China potentially hoarding gold to challenge the U.S. dollar. And now we've talked about this, you know, ad nauseum over and over, that China and Russia are both moving towards a gold-backed currency, moving towards getting away from a U.S.-controlled petrodollar. And Alan Greenspan has now openly penned an op-ed for the Council on Foreign Relations discussing gold and its possible role in China. So again, I would recommend everybody go to the Daily News at redpillreports.com, and you can find this article. We'll go through a few more things about the economy on the other side of this 3-minute break. I want to remind everybody that we are going to have Roger Sales on in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll be talking about sovereignty, about the Constitution, about the difference between legal and lawful. It's going to be a very, very interesting conversation. Very happy that all of you have joined us today. My name is JD. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming. And keep it right here. We'll be right back with the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Stay right here, guys.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear. Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon. Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. My name is JD, and we are live, like we are every day, Monday through Friday. It is 10:30 Central right now, and we are right in the middle of our news hour, doing the best we can to bring you the most pertinent and up-to-date news from around the world and from your backyard as well. Want to get back into some economic news right now. We were talking about Alan Greenspan, and this article is speaking about Alan Greenspan, who served at the helm of the Federal Reserve for nearly two decades, and he recently penned an op-ed for the Council on Foreign Relations discussing gold and its possible role in China, which is the world's second largest economy. He notes that if China converted only a relatively modest part of its 4 trillion foreign exchange reserves into gold, the country's currency could take an unexpected strength in today's international financial system. Alan Greenspan also believes that the downside risks for China stockpiling gold are fairly limited, at least from a pure investment point of view. He said it would be a great gamble, of course, for China to use part of its reserves to buy enough gold bullion in order to displace the United States from its position as the world's largest holder of monetary gold. He said, but that penalty for being wrong in terms of lost interest and the cost of storage would probably be modest. Now, the People's Bank of China has not formally disclosed any changes to its gold holdings in a long, long time, but it is believed that the central bank is purchasing gold to diversify its reserve holdings. In 2009, China announced that it had boosted its gold reserves by 454 tons via acquiring gold quietly over the previous 5 years. That represented an impressive 76% increase in gold reserves. And today, China still shows that it holds just over 1,000 tons of gold in reserves, but speculated by analysts to actually have around 2,000 to 3,000 tons of gold. And some market participants also believe China is building up its gold reserves to challenge the U.S. dollar, which is currently the world's reserve currencies. A few years ago, China's official news agency, Xinhua, said international supervision over the issuance of U.S. dollars should be introduced, and a new, stable, and secure global reserve currency may also be an option to avert a catastrophe caused by a single country. And I believe they're pointing their fingers squarely at the United States for that. So we've talked about this over and over and over again. China and Russia purchasing gold in crazy quantities. The idea that physical delivery of these metals is very hard to come by these days, as seen by the article last week. Talking about the selling out of Silver Eagles by the Mint. So obviously, you know, we spoke with V on Friday. We spoke with Joseph yesterday. It's very clear to everybody involved that the disparity between paper gold and physical gold, as well as silver, is ginormous. There's a ginormous disparity between the value that we see on paper and the value that we see in the real world. And we're seeing these governments around the world not buying into the investment hype, so to speak. They are taking possession of physical, and that's what we all recommend that each of you do out there. Take possession of your physical. Even yesterday, speaking with Joseph, you know, he said that the smartest move in the market right now would be to try and take profits wherever you can find them and sink them into precious metal commodities, which I, again, you know, I'm fully on board with that. I know V, the Gorilla Economist, is fully on board with that. So that is what's going on. And then in a related story, Russia is increasing the yuan's use in global trade, a key economic policy. Now, this was released yesterday, and it's coming out of Mr. Putin's mouth here. He says, if the U.S. is and has been using the dollar to control over the, if the U.S. has been using the dollar and control over the global reserve currency as a tool to further both their economic and geopolitical agendas, then Russia and Vladimir Putin has a counter to this. And as of November 10th, the leader of the Eurasian Energy Power asserted that it is in both Russia and China's interest to lessen the world's reliance upon the dollar and to open up markets to transact in other currencies such as the yuan. Putin's hardline approach against the U.S. dollar and U.S. hegemony came while speaking at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Beijing earlier this morning. His words were directed at the Asian trade delegates to emphasize how the effects of U.S. sanctions on Russia and how America's control over the global financial system restricts a sovereign nation's ability to function under their own economic will, and that there is now a distinct need to shift away from the dollar reliance and into new currencies for trade, such as the Chinese yuan. So, we're hearing it from China. We're hearing it even Dr. Mark Faber is saying it now. Alan Greenspan is saying it now. We are moving away from the dollar. I don't know how many more times we can say that, but it seems like every piece of economic news that comes out in terms of international economy is a reflection of other countries making that switch. So, again, get yourself into some physical gold right now, guys. Who knows how long this dollar is going to last? The dollar index is up. It's a perfect time to get out from under the dollar and into something precious. And I'm just going to continue to harp on that bandwagon until the end of the world, probably, guys. There's a great article on Zero Hedge that I've included in the news today. Again, it's a Zero Hedge article, so I don't have 35 hours to go through the entire thing for you guys. But the question that Tyler is posing right now is, do the lessons of history no longer apply? And I believe we have asked the last two economic guests that we've had on, and both of them have essentially said the same thing, that fundamentals are no longer in play in terms of any of the indexes that exist. And I believe Tyler Durden is now on that same bandwagon. Joseph actually said that the indexes yesterday were not actually even any markets anymore, that all we see is a reflection of the intervention. So I guess if you could look back historically at all of the interventions, you could possibly take some of that as a yardstick to measure going forward. But who really knows, because the extent of the intervention and the extent of the manipulation in terms of, well, everything, subprime, Forex, the mortgage crisis, the precious metals market, take your pick, there's just so much indication that none of those fundamentals exist anymore. And I think that this is a great article on Zero Hedge that really brings that to the forefront. And another very startling news, the tiny firm that saw the 1929 crash coming sees trouble for 2015. So the small firm that predicted the market crash back in 1929 is back again in the news today with a very ominous message. The Jerome Levy Forecasting Center sees a 65% chance of a recession in 2015. Clearly the direction of most of the recent global economic news suggests a movement towards a 2015 downturn, according to David Levy. Now, he is the chairman of the Jerome Levy Forecasting Center. Levy's forecast contrasts with the consensus of Wall Street, which is confident that growth will last for years. And Wall Street, ladies and gentlemen, is the only place that believes growth is going to last for years. Anybody that we have spoken with on the program thinks that that is an absolute pipe dream. Now, back in 1929, Jerome Levy, grandfather of the current chairman, did not like what he saw in his analysis of corporate profits and rather impressively sold all of his stocks before the October of 29 crash. And most recently, the group has warned about the housing bubble and proliferation of subprime debt as being the key factors responsible for the next big downturn. And this time around, David Levy is worried about the 2015 because the U.S. is significantly involved overseas where growth is slowing. And he's also concerned with the unusually high proportion of disposable income as it is now being exposed to the stock market. So more indicators that tomorrow's show with Aaron Dakins about prepping is probably just in time, you guys. So we'll look forward to that. But global economic downturn does seem to be the name of the game right now. And following in that line of thinking, I want to draw your attention to an alternate article that came out by Alex Henderson. He did a fantastic job outlining 10 economic trends that literally spell doom for America's workers. First and foremost, he talks about the discrepancy between official unemployment and what actually, you know, is being reported by the government, completely different numbers. But then he goes through these 10 points. I won't get into all of them super deep, but there are some significant indicators here that we are in trouble, and the American worker is not doing nearly as well as the talking heads on the television would like us to believe. The first sign that he points to is that fast food workers have gotten very old recently. I don't know if you have noticed, but low-paying fast food jobs were once dominated by teenagers and high school students who typically moved on to better-paying jobs after attending college or trade school. But according to the Center of Economic and Policy Research, 36% of fast food workers are now between the ages of 25 and 54, which underscores the fact that many Americans who would have had high-paying white-collar or blue-collar jobs are now stuck in dead-end service jobs. And I think that is par for the course. We talked a little bit about that with Joseph Meyer yesterday, noting the difference between what the government says the unemployment numbers are and what they say the population that is contributing to the workforce actually is. It seems like they are counting people who are part-time more and more these days, and those part-time workers, you know, like the 30,000 at Walmart that were just removed from the healthcare system there the other day, you know, it's the part-time workers that are really taking it in the shorts right now, guys. Alternative unemployment figures paint a grim picture of the U.S. job market. The BLS best-known formula for calculating unemployment is the above-mentioned U3. Lesser known is the BLS's U6 formula, which takes a broader view of unemployment and includes some of the people that the U3 omits, such as part-time workers who would like full-time employment and short-term, quote-unquote, discouraged workers. The BLS's U6 figure for September was 11.8, but statistics analysis John Williams, who publishes the Shadow Government Stats website, and you can find Shadow Stats on redpillreports.com on the main page also, he believes that the U6 is misleading because it has too narrow a definition of unemployment. And according to Williams' formula, the U.S. real unemployment rate for September is a whopping 23.1%, which is obviously very troubling. Another indicator is that Europeans are more likely to achieve the American dream than we are here in America. In the past, European immigrated to the United States in search of greater upward mobility. But with the U.S. economy resembling that of a banana republic, the American dream, ironically, is easier to achieve in parts of Europe now. In 2011, a report by the Pew Charitable Trust Economic Mobility Project compared upward mobility in the United States to that of 9 other major countries, including Germany, France, Australia, Canada, and the U.K., and Pew found that the U.S. was the lowest in terms of upward mobility. In other words, Americans who are born into poverty are more likely to remain in poverty than people in some parts of Europe. So there's that, which is also going on. Food insecurity, another issue he comments on. Back in 2017, million Americans were receiving food stamps, but according to the United States Department of Agriculture, that number is now 46.2 million people on food stamps. Number five would be the long-term unemployment is at record levels. Layoffs were common during the recessions of the early 80s and 90s and early 2000s, but in those recessions, most of the Americans who lost their jobs didn't remain unemployed longer than 6 months, whereas in the current economic downturn, it isn't very hard to find Americans who have been out of work for 2 or 3 years. That is a significant statistic. The minimum wage remaining stagnant is another thing that he is calling attention to. Barack Obama has supported raising the national minimum wage to $10.10, but we probably will be unlikely to see that, especially now with the new control over the House and Senate being staunchly Republican and Tea Party and whatnot. And again, you know, raising the minimum wage wouldn't necessarily be the greatest thing ever, but the real answer would be to create real economic recovery, you know, creating white-collar and blue-collar jobs that actually paid more than $20 an hour. But I will say that raising the minimum wage would at least be a step in the right direction. Union membership has reached an all-time low. When union membership was at its peak in the post-World War I America of the late 1940s, 50s, and 60s, labor unions were not the only beneficial for unionized electricians, plumbers, and construction workers, but they encouraged better working conditions across the board. Even those who went to college and pursued non-union white-collar jobs were benefiting from unions being in existence, but union membership has plummeted since then, according to the BLS, and the rate of unionization amongst American workers fell down to 11.3%, which is the lowest since 1916. He also calls neoliberal globalization a major factor in these things that we should all be concerned about. Neoliberal globalization has been a curse for both white-collar and blue-collar workers in the United States, encouraging the outsourcing of everything from manufacturing jobs to jobs in call centers and technical writing jobs in developing country. Josh Bivens, who research and policy director for the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., has studied globalization extensively and concluded back in 2011 that globalization and neoliberal policies has depressed wages for non-college educated Americans by 5.5%. Another crazy economic indicator, the too big to fail banks are now bigger than ever. When banksters who caused the economic crash of September of 2008 were bailed out by the American taxpayers, genuine reform in the financial sector never came about. Behemoths like JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Goldman Sachs should have been broken up into 20 or 25 smaller banks or something along those lines, but instead, the banks were all deemed too big to fail in 2008 and have since become much, much larger. Wells Fargo, according to the LA Times, had a whopping $1.4 trillion in assets in late 2013, compared to $609 billion in 2008. Journalist Matt Taibbi, who has done extensive reporting on the problems in the banking sector, is not exaggerating when he says that the U.S. too big to fail mega banks are all financial disasters waiting to happen. The last key economic factor that this gentleman wants us to consider today is low interest rates creating a retirement crisis. The fact that millions of Americans have been underemployed during this great recession is terrible from a retirement standpoint. People making less money have less money to invest in tax-deferred IRAs. And to make matters worse, both those with IRAs have been hammered by an extended period of pathetically low interest rates. In 2014 interview with Bloomberg, Alicia Munell, who is the director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, she described how interest rates have created a crisis, interest rates as a crisis, and asserted that 5 more years of low interest rates are going to make providing oneself with an adequate retirement extremely difficult. And in a 2013 Gallup poll, 37% of non-retirees says they do not expect to be able to retire until after 65. Compare that to the figure of only 14% who felt that way back in 1995 when banks were still paying decent interest rates. Now, we saw last week the first European bank instill negative interest rates in the retail sector. So I guess we should be thanking our lucky stars that the IRAs that we are invested in and the bank accounts that we are invested in are at least still paying a little bit of positive interest. I wonder how long it will be until we are paying the banks for the privileges of having them banking our money. Fractional reserve lending just, I must not pay as well as it used to, I guess. And then I want to draw your attention also as another interview that I'm not going to go through the entire article for, but at Gold Eagle, .com. There's a great article, and you can find this again at redpillreports.com, with an interview with Dr. Mark Faber, who is, again, urging people to be diversified, own your own physical gold, and to be your own central bank. And this is a fantastic interview that he did, just going through, Japan's new massive QE experiment, the suppression of oil prices, the importance of diversification, and the importance of owning physical gold. So I would encourage everyone to go and read this interview with Dr. Mark Faber because he is somebody that I would trust in terms of economic news and in terms of his economic insight. So there's that going on. Moving on to some tech news really quickly here. Obama has made it a point to come out and call for tighter rules from the FCC. In regards to preserving an open and free internet. And I am really conflicted about this story, guys, because now President Obama, he's urging the government to adopt tighter regulations on broadband service. And what he's attempting to do is to push through net neutrality. And net neutrality is something that I fully believe in. The main issue with net neutrality comes down to the fact that companies like AT&T and Verizon, the people who provide internet access for all of us, they would like to separate the streams of traffic on the internet, so to speak, and preserve high-speed streams of traffic for companies and startups that are able to pay more for that privilege, which of course undercuts a startup's ability to participate fairly on the internet. And I'm fully in support of net neutrality. You can just look at the dividing line. I mean, who are the people that have come out and talked against net neutrality? And of course, it's the big wigs, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, people like that. But we want the government to be responsible for ensuring that these things happen. And I just don't know, you know, I don't want the internet to turn out like the post office, and that's what I'm concerned would happen. Now, I'm not also saying that we need to have a private company doing this, but I believe that there are probably private companies out there that could do a better job than the federal government at ensuring net neutrality. But in the statement released yesterday, Obama has called on the Federal Communications Commission to enforce the principle of treating all internet traffic the same way. And that's, of course, the shorthand we're talking about of net neutrality, which means treating broadband services like utilities. And this way, the internet service providers won't be able to restrict the best access or to pick winners and losers in the online marketplace for services and ideas. So I'm very conflicted about this. I hate it when I have to agree with something that this guy's done. I have to believe that there is an undercurrent of agenda going on here that has something to do with getting the FCC more control over our internet access, and I'm not going to be a proponent of that. So I'm going to take this whole story with a grain of salt right now. Obama might have done something correct here, but it's difficult to say. Big hack being reported by the U.S. Postal Service, and they are eyeing China for this attack. Cyber thieves working from the Chinese governments are suspected of hacking into the United States postal computer networks and stealing personal information from over 800,000 workers. The FBI right now is leading the effort to track down the operatives responsible for the strike, but analysts are pointing their fingers at China, a nation which has long been associated with cyber theft. The idea or the thought out of the FBI right now is that potentially the Chinese hackers believe that our postal service is a lot like their postal service, and in China, the postal service there is actually responsible for keeping track of personal information for all of the citizens. So I would imagine that they thought, as they were getting into our postal service system, that they were going to find a cornucopia of information. They did, unfortunately, take a lot of personal information, but the post office has said that no customers' credit card informations were affected by the online onslaught. So that's at least a silver lining on that one. Firefox. Many of you probably use Firefox. I like Firefox and I like Chrome quite a bit for my browser. Lots of cool things with both of those. But Firefox has come out with a new button that is going to be part of their version 33.1, and it is going to add a forget button to the main toolbar. And this forget button is going to allow you to forget the last 5 minutes or 2 hours or 24 hours of browsing, but allow you to save the rest of your history and cookies from that time and from that time before. So a lot of you guys might be like me. You find yourself falling down a YouTube tunnel watching Michael Jackson videos, or you know, every interview that Pat Benatar has ever done, and then you realize maybe that wasn't something I want everybody knowing I was looking at, because it's embarrassing. So you'll be able to then go back and immediately remove your browsing history. I don't know if that's a great news or not, but it's just interesting to me, so I brought it up today. Pirate Bay co-founder Peter Sund has been released from prison after serving a little over 5 months in an 8-month sentence in Sweden. For those of you unfamiliar with the Pirate Bay, I would highly recommend that you don't go to the Pirate Bay and learn all about torrents. Torrents are are not good to know about, and I'll just leave it at that. So Sund was arrested in Sweden this past May following a raid by Interpol. He'd been on the run for more than 2 years after receiving a sentence from his for his role in running the popular torrent tracking site. I guess I'll get into it just a tiny bit. The torrent sites are a way to share large files and information anonymously across the world, and the reason he was arrested is because other people use the Pirate Bay to upload movies and music and things like that, which are, you know, obviously controlled by copyright laws. So he was arrested in his connection to that, but he is out. And last week we had a story about the third and final at-large Pirate Bay associate, Frederick Nijs, who was apprehended in Thailand. So we are seeing the Pirate Bay crew all now coming to justice for giving us the freedom to share music and movies with one another. You know, and I feel, personally, I feel much safer, and this is all facetious. I don't feel safer. I think it's ridiculous. But anyway, that's what happened there. Let's see here. CNN is being removed from Russia as a broadcaster. The American news giant CNN will cease broadcasting on cable networks in Russia by the end of the year, according to Turner International. Let's see. I know that I'm trying to remember the name. Is it Vodomosti, which is the Russian broadcasters, said that they were going to drop the 24-hour American news channel founded by 1980s media tycoon Ted Turner after December 31st this year. We've been broadcasting CNN in Russia since 1993, but Russia has stepped up and decided that they do not want foreign news going out in their country anymore, especially news that is so slanted like CNN. AT&T has extended their network to Mexico with a $2.5 billion Lucasel acquisition, which completely correlates to what we talked about with Aaron and Melissa the other day about how the corporations are moving forward into this North American union, regardless of whether or not the people want it to. Lucasel network covers nearly 70% of Mexico's 120 million residents. So now we will see a North American mobile internet system, a mobile internet and mobile phone system, all at the helm, being helmed by AT&T. So who knows if that's good news or not. I'm not really sure. Really quickly, I wanted to get into the something to smile about news today because there's two quick stories. First of all was an alleged cookie thief who is no match for some Girl Scouts. These two teens were arrested Saturday after attempting to steal a wagon full of Girl Scout cookies, but the Girl Scouts beat them up and took their wagon back. And if that doesn't make you smile, just don't mess with Girl Scouts and their cookies, guys. That's not the right thing. We're going to be right back with Roger Sales. This have an amazing discussion about sovereignty, about reality, about the things that most people won't talk about. So keep it right here. This is your Daily Dose of Deep Programming, your Red Pill Report's daily radio broadcast. We'll be right back.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest-growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why, with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigma.com EnigmaTV.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Real people, real radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show, ladies and gentlemen. My name is JD, and we are live right now. It is straight up 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are just now getting ready to speak with Mr. Roger Sales. And I cannot tell you, ladies and gentlemen, how excited I am to be getting ready to have this specific conversation. We're going to be talking about sovereignty in the United States. We're going to be talking about what your true role as a United States. I don't want to use the word citizen because that's not the correct word to use here, but as your birthright as an American, you have way more rights than we've all been told, and the system has been put in place that has lied to us, that has obfuscated the truth by changing language and by keeping us all dumbed down so we don't even have any idea what is actually going on. And Roger Sales has done such a fantastic job with his book From Sovereign to Serf, talking about government by treachery and the deception of words and what that means to all of us. So we're very happy to have Roger on today. And for those of you who don't know Roger, he is an author of a book called From Sovereign to Serf, which is one of the most important reference points in exploring this subject that there is on the planet, guys. So I cannot recommend his book highly enough. So he is an author. He's a talk show radio host. He's also an expat living in Argentina by way of Atlanta, Georgia. He is considered to be a foremost authority on citizenship, natural rights, and the Constitution. He's a regular weekly guest on Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz with host Jeff Bennett and Alfred Adask's American Independence Hour. He's also appeared on many, many other popular Patriot radio programs, like one that I used to frequent, The Power Hour with Joyce Riley, also Radio Liberty with Dr. Stan Monteith, and a slew of others. Roger Sales, thank you so much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Gosh, JD, thanks so much for the glowing introduction. That was a little bit dated. I'm no longer on with Jeff because I have my own show in the afternoon. We'll talk about that before the hour's over, no doubt. And also with Al Adask and I no longer do shows together because I've got this other show and we've got our own directions and stuff. But anyway, everything else is very accurate. Before we start, I'll give this, I usually don't do enough shameless self-promotion, okay?
Okay.
So let me do it just in case, because this is a new show, a first time, and your audience may not be familiar with this. Mm-hmm. You can familiarize yourself with all of this information, including purchase the book, either e-book. We've got it down to $4.99. It's practically a giveaway on the e-book because we want the information out there. And the printed version is available there. Someone else does that. It's out of our control. It's about $25. All that's available at this website. A, as in Apple, A, U.S. Passport, the number 4, ed.com. That would be Ed Snowden. And let me say it again. A, U.S. Passport, the number 4, ed.com.
Okie dokie.
There's also a 27-minute video. Let me, excuse me. The water went down the wrong way, JD.
Can't breathe water.
This way. There's a 27-minute video on there that even over and above the book, I think is maybe the most important thing that I have done. And that's available on that website in the second half. The website, first of all, has a bunch of Carrot Bars stuff on it, which a lot of us are very excited about.
Yes,
and,
we are.
And my approach and ideas and thinking on that of how it's a legitimate political weapon for us as well as a financial vehicle for all of us. That's another show. But as you scroll down there, the political stuff's in the second half of that webpage. And right up at the top are two blue click-through links for either A, the video in English, or B, one with Spanish subtitles, because I live in Argentina, as you said, JD, for our Spanish-speaking friends, because this message transcends languages. This is the beast of Revelation that we're dealing with here. And let me also say that it's, even though that book has my name on it, there's three men's lives between those covers and over 100 years.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you've just brought up that portion about it transcending populations, because one of the main issues that I've got when we get into these discussions is the concept of liberty. And I think that's a key point to start with, because without a concrete definition of liberty, you know, what are we fighting for? How do we hold our elected officials accountable for ensuring liberty in our lives if we can't qualify that with something? And, you know, the other aspect of the liberty argument to me is that liberty, although it was codified first by the United States as a right, you know, a fundamental human right for all of us, it is not exclusively an American thing. Liberty should be something that we are promoting internationally, right?
I'm back. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Were you able to hear what I was saying?
No, when we get those little dropouts like that, I just totally drop out, so I didn't hear.
I wanted to just say that I was encouraged by the fact that you mentioned that this transcends populations, because to me, the most important issue is defining liberty, understanding what liberty actually means for us, and because without that, how can we hold anyone accountable for ensuring our liberty? And also the understanding that liberty itself is not an exclusive right to Americans, but it is actually an exclusive right for all people, and until we understand how liberty was is supposed to work here, we can't then go out and promote it around the world. That's my opinion.
Well, you know, we've got a very interesting and unusual situation, is that the only countries that have liberty are there's only a few of them, and it's all based in the common law, and the common law goes back to biblical principles.
Right.
So that's what you're talking about, even though in the great picture here, yes. That is the question in my book. There's a great there's a great quote. I should drag it up and read it, but I'll just paraphrase it here from Cicero. Now, this was written before Jesus Christ was born, and he goes back in there much more eloquently than I can paraphrase him, and just says, basically, there's only two places you get your rights. You either get your rights from God or you get your rights from man. And this is true since before the founding of the suns. Is exactly his words, all right? And that boils down to right there. The battle we fight today is the battle that's been fought since the dawn of time, and it is lex rex versus the common law, or the law of the king, or the law of man, or the law of the city, as Brent Winters, my common law expert on Friday co-host, talks about and calls it the law of the city. That's very appropriate, because what we try and do is simplify things so that they can get the confusion out of the way. Because what they've done is simple, and they've obfuscated it by complication, and that's how they pulled it off, is they put layers of onions on there with these words and hidden concepts. And once you get back to basics and understand the basics we're talking about here, everything is simple. Let me pose a example of that for you, JD, on what you were saying a minute ago. You were talking very eloquently about liberty, correct? Well, how would you describe liberty? How do you describe, what would your definition be of freedom and liberty? And then let me go ahead and give you the punchline.
Okay.
I'm going to show you true brilliance and show you how Blackstone synthesized it down to one word. And oh. I'll bet you can't do that.
Yeah, I don't think I can do it in one word. I could probably do it, well, if you include the hyphen, the word liberty means self-ownership. How's that?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, Blackstone brought it down, and this would really make you appreciate Blackstone, okay? Because those are pretty big concepts, freedom and liberty. We could talk about them for 3-4 hours?
Yeah, easily.
Okay. Well, he condensed it down to one word, and that one word is locomotion.
Locomotion. I don't get it.
The ability to go from point A to point B unimpeded.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Locomotion. I mean, the entire concept of freedom and liberty synthesized to one word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these words are really important. Karl Marx said the word is the skin of a thought. So therefore, if they can control your thoughts through the words, they control you.
Absolutely, they do.
Exactly what's happening. Okay.
Can we back up just real quickly though, Roger?
Sure.
I want to know what it was. Did you have like an aha moment where all of a sudden a bunch of light bulbs went off, or were you just kind of presented, you know, over a timeline with certain things and everything just started kind of coalescing in your mind? Was there an instance of aha, or was it something else?
Good question, JD. No, actually, no. When I was in college age, late teens, early 20s, back in the 60s, I always knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what it was. And it went through that period of time, the 70s and the 80s, and up until 1992, when I was doing network marketing part-time, or mostly full-time, really, and that's where I stumbled into the tax movement. And that, one of my good carrot bar guys, his brother, came up to me and said, income tax is illegal. And I did what most people did. I said, oh yeah, right.
They
said,
I
no,
wish.
We got a tape, a videotape. And I said, well, I want to see it. And it took them about 2 weeks to get it down from Virginia. But that tape changed my life. And the night I watched it was July the 16th of 1992. And the reason I can tell you that exact date was because it was the night of Bill Clinton's first acceptance speech. And I stopped watching the tape halfway through to watch what I thought would be a 30, 45-minute acceptance speech, which turned into a two-hour acceptance speech, the longest acceptance speech in American political history, by the way. So I could go back and nail the night that I watched it because of that event, see? But I'd had the suspicion, the intuition, if you will, for many years, for decades. And I had two opportunities where the bait was put in front of me and I didn't take it, but the third time was this videotape on taxation, and watching that tape changed my life, even though the information was Patriot information. And I'm not saying some people have done that possibly deliberately. Some people do it because they've done such a great job of masquerading what they've done that people haven't been able to figure it out. And when you can't get a concrete answer because you don't understand the basics that are going on, you reach out and grab anything that makes sense and plug it in and think, oh, I've got it. And none of that stuff has it. These guys, let me tell you the biggest advantage, JD, that I could give anybody that's studying this, living it, trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that would be this. Sun Tzu.
Art of War.
Yes. And if you don't know these guys and know the way they think and do things, you ain't got a prayer.
That's
a prayer of figuring it out. Now, why have we been so successful at doing it? Because we got the tax thing just recently totally figured out too, okay, how they're doing that little deal. But with this jurisdiction deal right here, and the reason that we're better at this than anybody in the world, okay, is because our teacher who recently passed away this past July the 4th, John W. Benson, who literally gave his life to research the legal basics so that we could understand what's been done. And without him and his sacrifice, none of this would be possible, all right? So what he did was went back and studied the law because he loved it. All right. And then he was working in contract for a civil service job. And of course, then he's dealing with contracts and he got particularly interested in tax law. This is an aha moment for you.
Right.
And so he was studying, when you wake up like that and you get interested, you study the tax law that you're under. And so, but he loved Old English law and old law. One day in the University of Denver Law Library, in the back section where they got the old English books, he was searching around back there for something, and those aisles are very narrow because not a lot of people use them. And so when he turned around, his elbow hit another book on the opposite wall. It fell on the floor open. And when he went down to pick it up to put it gingerly back on the shelf, there was a part of the book that was talking about the Exchequer, which is the treasury in England, and how they collected the king's taxes and the things they couldn't seize when they did an execution. And it was the same things the IRS couldn't seize today.
Wow.
That was an aha moment right there. Okay. Yeah. That's where all this came from. Right there.
Okay. Well, then let me finish
that thought. The reason that we're so successful is if you took, and you can analogize this and visualize it because we like dealing in concepts. People pick concepts up easier. All right. Is you've got an overlay. I think everyone. An overlay in a presentation where they got that projector thing that you take a transparency and put it on there and it projects it on the wall. Well, we've got a transparency of the old systems, and all we do is put the new system on top of it and see where they match up and where they deviate. Mm-hmm. Because look at it this way, just to get the complicated nature out of this perhaps for people. If we were a bunch of old satanic, greedy, murdering, bloodthirsty bastards a couple hundred years ago sitting around the table, mm-hmm. scheming to take over the world. Would we get together and build a whole new system where we've got to try and figure out every contingency in a future that we don't know with technology we don't know is coming, or would we go back and use systems that have been in place for thousands of years that are tried and proven where all the contingencies are already addressed?
Right. I think the second option is obviously more lucrative to them.
Well, it's the only logical way to move forward. And if you start thinking like your enemy and put yourself in that thought pattern, it will be much easier for you. So that was the point that I wanted to make. But yeah, that's the course. Now, I've been involved in this, immersed is probably a better word, for 23 and a half years now. Mm-hmm. It has been my life for 23 and a half years, and it was 15 or more in the tax side, and it was only when I decided to move to Argentina and for the very first time in my life had to get a passport. And I had to go get an application, and in the passport application, I found, with my knowledge and understanding, I found the key to the matrix.
Really? And you want to talk about that with us then?
Yeah, because it's all involved in these words. It's really simple. I mean, what they've done is absolutely, totally simple. People just don't understand it. And I would tell you this, JD, is because you're enslaved in your minds.
I fully 100,000% agree with that.
You are enslaved in your minds. The laws are written correctly. You just don't understand them. And when they ask you, for instance, JD, are you a resident on some legal form, or when you're going for a driver's license, or...
No, JD, I'm not a resident or a citizen or any of those fake words.
Well,
but...
I understand that we're doing this hypothetically.
Yes.
So when they ask you that and you go, well, yeah, man, I live right over there. Where do
right.
I sign?
Well, and what's important to understand is that they're not asking you where you live. They're asking you where you sleep at night. That's where the creepy factor comes in.
No, they're not. They're asking you which political system you're involved in.
Ah, okay.
If you go to Webster, you don't even have to go to a law dictionary. Go to Webster's Collegiate Dictionary and look at the word resident. Okay. And you're going to see the first two definitions are these. The first one says the act or fact of living in or dwelling in a place for some time.
Right.
The second one says the act or fact of living or dwelling in a place for some time for the receipt of a benefit or the discharge of a duty. There's the legal definition. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing, just like there's only two places, God or man, you get your rights. Here's a word with two definitions, one legal, one geographical. So, JD, are you a resident? Are you imputing a geographical or a political definition into that term?
I would counter that and say, well, if the United States is a for-profit corporation, how does one live inside of a corporation? I don't live in the United States. I live on the United States.
Well, see, that you can use that stuff, and the people that are in there doing Don Quixote-ish stuff, which I jousting at windmills in a sense of fighting the system inside their own court system, that one has worked, all right?
Right.
But my approach after doing that for a few years and realizing the futility of it and seeing the dead bodies along the side of the road was there's got to be a better way. In other words, you're fighting it. The people that are doing that are fighting it from the bottom up.
Right.
Through layers of defenses that have been well thought out and established to defeat, obfuscate, and maybe even make you go commit suicide. Why not do an end run, a flanking maneuver, and get out outside their defenses and go around to the back where there ain't no defenses and cut their damn heads off?
I agree. I completely agree with that, too.
Well, that's what motivated me to go down this path many years ago.
Okay. Well, I want to outline for people... What's the situation that we're actually in? I mean, we talk about being a slave to these people, but what does that actually mean?
Well,
I told you
in our little interview last night that we'd maybe do a timeline because I think that's the easiest way for people to get this conceptually, the big picture, and uptake it the quickest without any kind of complicated this. Let me tell you the technique they're using first. Okay. There's a verse in James 1:8. This is totally spiritual. This is a spiritual battle we're in, okay? And it manifests itself in the physical plane. It is a spiritual battle. In James 1:8, it says, a double-minded man is uncertain in all of his ways. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what they're using. They take a word that's been established. You want to use gay, terrorism, resident, any of these words, citizen of the United States, any of these words. They take a word that's got an established definition in your mind, just like Karl Marx said, the word is the skin of a thought. Remember that. Mm-hmm. And they take and implant the opposite definition and then start absolutely nailing you with it. Let's take the word gay because it's pretty topical and timely, and it's something most people find somewhat reprehensible, okay, morally. So they take a perfectly good word that's been there for 100 years, give it a totally opposite definition, then they hammer it with you, radio, in your face, in the society, TV programs, etc. Gradually, that definition changes in your subconscious mind, which controls 90% of your day and your body, and only 10% of the conscious mind is left, and gradually the subconscious new definition takes over the 10% of your consciousness, and they got you, pal.
Wow. How long has this agenda been going on, if you had to take a guess, Roger?
Well, I mean, it's right there in James 1:8, a double-minded man is uncertain in all of his ways. There's another example in the Old Testament, J.D., and I heard this on Pastor Peters one night when he was live. I used to listen to him a lot, and it was right there in another lesson that he was teaching, and it just gave me the answer, and I've never found the verse in the Old Testament, but it goes like this. One of the Baal-worshipping tribes, Malachite, Edomite, whoever, and they lusted after and coveted the next adjacent tribe's land. And so they conjured up Baal, and they were walking with Baal, and they said, how do we defeat those guys over there? And he said, trick them with words.
Wow. That's incredible.
Okay, so that's what's going on, so you understand it. Now let's go back and look at this timeline.
Okay.
Because what I think you'll understand if you look into this information and internalize it, and by the way, if you're serious about looking at the book and this information touches you and moves you, I would tell you to read it at least twice. If you ain't nobody on the face of the earth going to get everything out of one reading of that book, okay?
I hear you.
So I had a real, a former homicide investigator, 20 years, one of Dan Metter's research team leaders, guy from South Florida, Jim Prentice, wrote me 2 weeks after the book was out. He said, Roger, your book's a masterpiece. He said, I've read it 10 times in 2 weeks and got something different out of it every time.
Wow, that's a heck of an accolade. And I'll tell you, man, this is such an interesting topic too. I would be in that boat also, just wanting to reread and reread, because there's always something to learn in this theater that we're playing in right now.
What you're going to have to do to get your life and your thinking straightened out, JD and listeners, is now you know what they've done, and now you know how to approach undoing it and getting your sanity back. And that is, you've got to internalize the basics in this information and then go back and address every knot that's double-tied in your mind, in your total personal and world view, and straighten it out. Flip it back to the dialectic, because that's what's happening. It's all dialectic. And once you've gone through that, and you see, that takes time. I had a guy call into my show about a month ago, and he'd written me an email. I'd answered his question on the air. It was about Argentina and the sovereignty vulture fund thing going on down here. And so he called in with the show one day, and he says, "Well, listen, thanks for doing that." And he said, "I bought your book, and I read it." And then this, he just said it matter-of-factly, it hit me like a sledgehammer. He said, "I bought your book and read it, and then I thought about it for a year."
Yeah. I remember when I first was approached by all of this subject, you know, I did a lot of research just in terms of the truth movement, 9/11, all of these things that really answered the question for me of what was happening. You know, what happened at 9/11? What happened at Waco? What happened at all these things? And when I started learning that there has been an agenda to change language in order to make my labor, my talent, time, and energy, to capitalize on that, so to speak, in terms of, you know, financing the government and financing everything that's going on. When I realized that, I realized that was the why answer and not the what, but it is the why all of these other things are happening. And it probably took 4 years.
There's one other big W, too. You know, any investigative reporter does the 5 W's: who, what, when, where, and why. And the two are who and why.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd certainly like to know who.
Well, you can. It's the same evil forces that have been fighting this battle from that side since the absolute beginning of time. It's just that they use all of these little tricks and all these subtleties. They have evil written on their hearts, and we have good written on our hearts, and that's how they take advantage of us right there. Yeah. And I'm sorry, man, it is all spiritual and biblical. I mean, this stuff's all in there, and if there was a crux for me even early on, because I know we're getting close to the break here, what they've done is they've turned you into property, and they're using you as collateral for the bonds that back the world currency. That's what's going on.
Well,
now, how they've done it is slick as bus station chili. Okay?
Oh, it absolutely is, yeah.
Give you an insight into who these people are and why they're so hard to defeat, and why people like Thomas and Jefferson said that it takes eternal vigilance. There's our little cue, and we'll pick this up on the other side, JD, I guess.
I look forward to it, man. Yeah, we're going to take a quick 3-minute break. This is Roger Sales. My name is JD, and you are tuned into the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for today. We will be back in just a few minutes. Keep it right here, learning all kinds of incredible information today, guys. Oh, Roger, you're doing awesome, buddy.
Thanks, JD.
Yeah, man.
I'm pretty at home behind the mic.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN Worldwide.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. LifeStraw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. LifeStraw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. LifeStraw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing LifeStraw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tatler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube.
Advertising, I mean user experience, has always been our number one priority on YouTube. Recently, we've noticed that there is an abundance of clear white blank space in the margins of each page of YouTube. So we asked ourselves, why don't we fill these with bright, flashy ads? Now, every page will have full-size ads on the edges, and they may or may not be relevant to the videos you're watching. These ads might be unsavory enough to make you want to hide your screen from your parents, but that's what makes YouTube Plus all the more interactive.
Cause what are you gonna do? Switch to Vimeo? YouTube Plus, what are you gonna do about it?
Like a cancer that's silently spreading.
Agent for Truth with Joe Bannister. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Diddy, we are live like we are every day, Monday through Friday from 10 until noon Central Standard Time. We are joined today by Mr. Roger Sales, who is an author and a radio talk show host and is here to talk to us about sovereignty and about what is actually happening in our country and what has happened to all of us that many of you might not even be aware of out there. And Roger, before we went to the break, I think you really hit the nail on the head, my friend. You said essentially that what these people have done by obfuscating language was turn us into property, and they have essentially utilized our time, talent, and energy, which in my opinion is the only thing of actual value on the planet. They have turned that into collateral in order to fund their shadow economy. And I understand that, but if you would be so kind, could you extrapolate on that and tell us how that
was? It is so insidious, we could probably do a whole hour on what you just talked about right there and the layers of deception and the layers of burden. But let's, because of time, and perhaps you'll be gracious enough to have me back and we can talk about these things because I really
absolutely
do enjoy teaching about them. What they've done is to turn us into property. Now, you know, you can get into these, this is the fine points of this stuff. You see, that's another one of these words. It has a specific legal meaning. In other words, JD, if you own your car, you have a tendency to go, well, that car is my property, right? Or that dog's my property, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not right. It is colloquially, but legally, the dog or the car are a thing, and the property is a right in and to the thing.
Ooh, okay.
So, see, there's a great gap in understanding that word and how it's used just in that one thing right there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, is that my property? Well, guess what? You're their property, pal. Your property can't, can your dog go down to the store and buy him a can of Alpo?
No, uh-uh.
Can he run down to the pet store and get him a leash or a collar?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, you can't do anything like that either. That's why you have fiat currency instead of gold. Gold pays debts, fiat currency discharges debts.
Right.
Why? Because property can't own property.
Wow, okay.
So you see, the now we can, another, there's another 30 minute or an hour discussion right there.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, there's so many layers to this onion to be peeled, but I want to try and get just the baseline stuff.
For brevity of time, let's go to this timeline thing. I think that is about the best illustration that I can give of what's happening. And if you've got the curiosity and it touches you and you feel there's substance here, then you can go get the book or listen to my show or call in on I'm on there 2 hours a day too, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, let's do it.
So this started back before the Civil War. I think when you study this and internalize it, you'll come to the same conclusion I have, which is that this is the reason for the Civil War. All right?
Wow.
And it's right there in that video. Because when Andrew Jackson defeated the second attempt at a central bank with the "You Den of Vipers and Thieves" speech,
yes,
that was in the mid-1830s. And they went about planning a way that they were going to get this thing in, and nobody was going to pull that crap to them because nobody was going to understand it. And that's exactly what happened. Remember that Abraham Lincoln said that my fear is not the armies of the South, it's the money powers.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So even back in those days, those pressures were being applied.
Now, would you say that's the number one reason that the Civil War was fought then?
Absolutely, without question. How do you know that? Because they swept away the 13th Amendment, which was the no titles of nobility, and ran the new 13th Amendment in, and it's really one of the keys to understanding this. And the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, if you don't believe what I'm saying, and I've recently, just recently, within the last month, come up on this, because I'm always striving to ways to teach this simpler, all right? Mm-hmm. So I can show you that they're running parallel governments right in the damn Constitution, right in the 13th and the 14th Amendment. You want to know how?
Yes.
The 13th Amendment outlaws involuntary servitude. It allows voluntary servitude by omission, important point.
Ah.
And towards the end of the 13th Amendment, it uses a specific word, their jurisdiction, plural. 14th Amendment is singular, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Singular. There's the parallel governments they're running right there. Those two amendments still stand. They've had hundreds of court cases decided on them since that time. Those are the two parallel governments they're running.
And then
trap door between them, and that's what I found in the passport application was a trap door.
It comes down to that consent issue where you are consenting to something that you're unaware of, right?
Well, it is. Exactly. You know, let me rephrase it another way. In Rome, Caligula, well, of course, he's pretty famous for his decadence and debauchery. Caligula would pass laws, and then he'd nail them on a pole 10 feet above the ground.
Right.
There's a quote out of Pollock and Maitland, who are two English jurists, that was commenting on Japanese or Chinese, I think it was Japanese, back in the 1800s, and the statement is, it's in my book, the people must abide by, but not be apprised of, the law.
Wow.
Now that's what's going on right there.
Right.
Okay. So what they do is they hide it and flip it. So now we go in, we swipe away the 13th Amendment, we bring in the 14th Amendment after the Civil War, and if the southern states wouldn't pass that rascal, they'd go and burn the law libraries of the states. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Oh, my
Absolutely.
Goodness.
And there's a lot of, we could do another hour too easy on all that, okay? So, but that happened against the people, even some of the new federal citizens' wishes, and so they passed the 14th Amendment. That set up the dual political statuses. Let's use this concept of political status, okay? So the key case to understand that was in the 1860s, early 1870s. We went through all of that, 70s, 80s, up into the 90s of the 1800s, and there was a real important case. I've never heard another Patriot guy bring it up, called Plessy v. Ferguson. Have you ever heard of that?
No, sir, I haven't.
Plessy, P-L-E-S-S-Y, you can read about it on the internet, it's a very brief case, I won't go into a lot of it here. That case affirmed at the Supreme Court in 1894, I believe, separate but equal. That's when you had the black drinking fountains, the white drinking fountains, the black restrooms, the white restrooms, okay, the black dining cars, the white dining cars. And that's what Plessy versus Ferguson was about. Okay. And so that reaffirmed it. Well, the question you ask is, how in the hell can separate be equal?
Right.
Well, because they both had a political status. One was the old national citizen and the new federal citizen under the 14th Amendment. Bingo.
Wow.
Recognized. It was, they even separated them, for God's sakes.
Right. Wow. Okay. It's just so crazy.
2 years later, in 1896, another Supreme Court case that didn't have to do with blacks, it had to do with Chinese, called U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark. It's the case that all the Obama birthers used as their reference, because it is the single most important case in the history of our country on these issues of denizenship, citizenship, etc., where you're born, how your lineage follows you, etc., etc. 2 years after Plessy versus Ferguson now, in 1896, and the Chinese, because of the same situation, they were trying to kick the Chinese out of the country, and they wanted to be here. And thousands of them filed suits. One of them got to the Supreme Court, and they said, nope, Wong Kim Ark is a citizen of the United States. He was born here. So what it did was expand the 14th Amendment from just blacks to everybody.
Wow.
And there's where your anchor babies come from.
I was just thinking that exact same thing. Yep. Yeah.
That's where that comes from, 1896. So now we go into the 1900s. In 1913, they take control of the government through the Federal Reserve and start setting this thing up. They get us into World War II to start their little take over the world process. We have the first depression in the early 20s, which consolidates the Federal Reserve and gets all the independent bankers out of the picture. We go on, and then they turn the tap on, and we have the Roaring 20s. Well, why were the Roaring 20s roaring? Because they had the credit taps turned on. Right. And in 1929, they turned them off. And on March the 9th of 1933, the U.S. was declared bankrupt. That's in my book from Congressman McFadden in the Congressional Record, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so on that day, previous to that point, the gold had backed our money. Had it not, J.D.?
It had, yes, sir.
Okay, but now the people were going to be turned into property in this new little system that was set up with the 14th Amendment. Okay?
Yeah.
So, but property can't own property, can they? So property can't have gold, so they took the gold. And the property is now used to back the bonds that are backing for the world reserve currency. So we went through the 30s, and they instituted, you could call it the New Deal, you could call it the Raw Deal, or you could call it the Jew Deal. Any of those things pretty well fit, okay?
Right.
And so they instituted the Raw Deal, I'll use that, in the 30s. And in 1940, and I have to thank Larry Beecraft for this, even though Larry doesn't believe this because he's too trained in his lawyering. Lawyers are trained in procedure. They're not trained in law.
Well, they're officers of the court. And we go back to this whole thing, how they're in the United States, there's not supposed to be people with, titles of royalty who are
titles
working
of
in the
nobility.
Court. That's what Esquire is.
That was the old 13th Amendment that they got rid of. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, Larry Beecraft, we got on an email discussion with a group of people one night on this residency word. Mm-hmm. And I picked up an old Black's Law Dictionary and went back and found the exact, nailed it, you know. And so he goes and searches. He sends me back this thing called the Nationality Act of 1940. It's in the statutes at large, not the code. That's where the real law is, okay? And so I start reading, well, right there in the first five definitions is the whole answer to everything I've looked for over 20 years, all right? And so in 1940, they took the old white citizen political status from Plessy versus Ferguson, and they changed it to a U.S. national. And then they twisted it and convoluted it, and I can show you seven layers over into the code and put it in immigration and naturalization in Title 8 and hit it, all the states, as outlying territories.
Wow, which is why they legislate from a district, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. And so now we go through the 40s, and in 1951, through a Treasury order, they changed the old Bureau of Internal Revenue. I'm going to cough for a second here. they changed the old internal Bureau of Internal Revenue, the revenuers, that we now call BATF, and they changed it to the Internal Revenue Service. That was in 1951. In 1954, let's go back to the Supreme Court, because they had another pretty important decision. It was called Brown versus Board of Education. You ever heard of that one,
Jay? I've heard of that one, sir. Yes, sir.
And you know the background on that one? It was out of Little Rock, and it was over segregation.
Correct.
And the ruling that came out said no Plessy versus Ferguson, no separate but equal, equal in the classroom, equal in the society.
Ooh.
They lowered everybody down to the federal citizenship.
Under the guise of doing a certain minority group of
people. Yeah, it's always under the guise.
It always is. It's always a humanitarian issue.
You want to get the, you want to get the cherry on the sundae that I just made for you?
Yep.
Guess what happened 2 months later?
What's that?
They instituted the 1954 Internal Revenue Code that's been in place ever since.
Oh, my goodness.
So there's your timeline. Now what they've done is they've taken and they split it and caused two political statuses, and then went back and they merged all, both of them, and hid the original one. So what I found, now let's go back to the historical part. What have they really done? They've brought the feudal system in with the 14th Amendment. Now, there's a quote on that on my site, USPassport4ed.com. There's a quote out of that case I mentioned, U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark, and it's from the sitting Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. You think he might know what he's talking about?
Well,
it's in the dissent, because nobody ever reads dissenting.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and so it says, if the amendment, it's talking about the 14th Amendment, bears the construction now put upon it, it brought the English common law rule, that would be feudalism, into this country for the first time, just as Britain was being relieved of its inconvenience.
Wow.
Now, the word jurisdiction comes from the word allegiance, and allegiance comes from the feudal era, and allegiance and the concept of jurisdiction came from that act of voluntary feudalism, when you volunteered into feudalism, because there was two types of serfs. There was an involuntary serf, like the blacks in our country.
Right.
You were born into it. You couldn't get out of it except for one way. There was only one way you could get out of involuntary servitude, and that was if you were a bastard. Because there was always a chance you were sired by the lord of the manor.
Hmm.
Now, the other way was the voluntary servitude, and it's like sharecropping.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm.
And so you go in, and if you've ever seen Monty Python's Holy Grail,
yes,
you've actually seen an oath of fealty in that movie. And the new voluntary serf would kneel in front of the lord of the manor, the lord of the manor, and put his hands up like he's praying.
Right.
The lord of the manor would cover his hands with the lord's hands, and there would be other serfs around, witnesses. It's a legal ceremony.
Huh.
And you, as the voluntary serf, pledge your body and your worldly goods to the lord. Your body, you are property. But you volunteered into that. And you can volunteer out. And
right,
when they took the 13th Amendment out and left voluntary servitude in by omission, legal by omission, it only outlaws involuntary servitude. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1933, they slipped in everybody as voluntary serfs. Now, you can volunteer out, but they don't really tell you that. That's what I was getting to earlier when I said they ask you that question, JD. Are you a resident? Or are you a citizen of the United States, right?
Right.
So what are they really asking you now that we know that this is coded?
Well, they want to know if you're a serf, essentially, if you have allegiance
you,
to
JD,
them.
Are you, by the way, JD, are you still a voluntary serf on the federal manor here? Wanting to stay in servitude? Yep, that's me. Where do I sign?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you see, in the feudal era, if your parents were in voluntary servitude and you were born and conceived,
mm-hmm,
you were born into that condition but you, like them, could always volunteer out. And that's what they've hidden, and that's why they've couched it in this language.
Wow.
Now it's constitutional, see, buddy? Just because
right.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Just because you don't know what the hell is going on, well, hey, tough newbies.
Well, I want to know about, in terms of this collateralization of people and in terms of turning people into property, what were the instruments that were involved? I mean, you hear a lot about the
birth certificates.
Yeah.
And what they're using, they brought in the commercial law. You see, that's the king's law. That's the law of the city because it's this contract law from Babylon that's
right.
been sophisticated over thousands of years, see?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the instrument that they're using. They passed the birth control law in the early 1920s, so they were setting it up with that. It used to be in family Bibles,
right.
births and marriages. And, yes, that is somehow collateralized. Now, we think that the method they're using is in the Uniform Commercial Code, which is the old law merchant, which is the Babylonian merchant code. Those
right.
three things are all the same.
The law of the sea, essentially.
Yes, it's called the Doctrine of Reification.
Okay.
It's spelled exactly like it sounds, the Doctrine of Reification, and it's a legal doctrine inside the Commercial Code where there's a plenty of examples with it in old law. Let's say that the cotton grower goes and he puts and sells his cotton to the warehouseman who's going to combine everybody's cotton and ship them, right?
Okay.
And so when you sell it or when you assign it to him, he gives you a warehouse receipt.
Right.
And in the eyes of the law, whoever has the warehouse receipt has the goods.
Ah.
So then the goods now take on a shadowy existence, and they become the piece of paper, the warehouse receipt.
Right.
Okay? Now, go back into blacks, and let's tap back into this feudal era, because you can go back in the feudal, which was 1,000 years of legal precedent, by the way, so we're not talking chicken liver here.
Right.
All right?
Right.
And so, in the feudal era, the serfs were called villeins. We call them villain, that's the English pronunciation. It's spelled V-I-L-L-E-I-N, it's French. Villeine, because
wow.
it was the feudal system was mainly in Europe first. William the Conqueror, at the behest of the Catholic Church, brought it over to England. Okay, and so if you look in blacks, you'll find that there's a number of different types of villains. All right, and the one we want to concentrate on is a villain regardant.
Okay.
Regardant. And that definition in black says a villain attached to the land, property, and transferable by deed. Bonds.
Wow. Wow.
Don't forget, bond is the root word of bondage.
Right, right. Boy, I mean, this is just so groundbreaking, Roger. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you see, JB, I've been trying to tell people this for 23 years, and I can't get anybody to hardly listen.
Well, it's because it's such a scary topic, man. Once you really understand fundamentally what is going on around you and that you are lock, stock, and barrel owned and traded by these people and that your labor, your future wages and earnings are collateralized, and that's what floats the economy. And you have to stop and think, if you were going to be an evil group of people that wanted to run an economy, what better source of value could you possibly find for your fiat currency
Look at the layers of compound interest. You know, J.P. Morgan called compound interest the eighth wonder of the world.
Right.
Okay. And so the first layer you've got is on the bonds. All right. So the bonds, by the way, when the Federal Reserve puts out $83 billion a month, they don't just put out $83 billion fiat currency. They put out $83 billion in bonds, too, because the bonds back it. That's the full faith and credit statement.
Okay.
All right. So they're getting the interest on the bonds, and then they take the fiat currency, what we call Babel bucks, and they take the Babel bucks and they send them into the economy, right? So then the banks, the Federal Reserve, loan it to their big member banks, their best customers. That's that overnight rate you hear about. And then they turn around and double it and loan it out to the banks, and then the banks use that to loan out to people. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 levels of compound interest going on. You wonder why you can't progress your lives.
Well, and you're not designed to. I mean, the concept of interest in general outlines the financial system as the largest Ponzi scheme that's ever existed. I mean, if you can't, if all you are being, if the federal government, not the federal government, but the Federal Reserve or the Treasury is just creating the principal, you know, in terms of the loans as they are accepting promissory notes, they create the principal. Where is the interest supposed to come from? The whole system is designed for someone else to fail.
That is the only, you hit a very key point right there. Big misunderstanding for people. And that is that when people make the statement, they make money out of thin air. They don't make nothing out of thin air except that compound interest that's compounding on the other compound interest. Okay? Because the rest is collateralized.
Right. Right. Exactly.
It has to be collateralized because that's the process on the scam. They take, let's say you buy a car here. I'll show you the scam real quick if we got time. You buy a car, you take and go in, haggle on the price, decide on which one, and sign the contract, right? Mm-hmm. They take the contract back to the financial institution and they put it on the liability side of the ledger.
Yes.
Not an asset. Then they discount it into the secondary market, pull back the cash, and put that on the other side to balance out the books, and that's what they pay the car dealer off in. So they never loaned you anything. Every loan in the world under this system's a fraud.
Absolutely.
Because you loaned them your signature, and it's that compound interest that then builds, and the other depreciates whatever your collateral is, depreciates.
Yeah, there's been legal precedent of that. People getting their mortgages released because the bank has said, yes, we have this money and we'll give it to you, but the bank doesn't have the money until they monetize your collateral. They monetize your promissory note, which means they're not giving you full disclosure of information, which means you're not able to duly consider their information that they're giving you, which makes all of those contracts null and void, in my opinion.
But, yes, and you see, here's a very important point, JD. Fraud is not fraud until it's discovered.
Oh, that's just disgusting, Robert. Roger.
So, you know, we're talking, like I said, about big subjects here, and we literally could do both of your hours for the rest of this week and not cover it all.
Yeah, well, I'm hopeful that you will, as you mentioned earlier, grace us again with your presence coming up in the next month or so. I'd love to do this once a month as we start flushing these issues out, because we really like to pick on issues around here that affect everyone and that are based on truth. And this, you couldn't get more in line with those two points, in my opinion, than talking about this.
I was trying to lead into this. You ask about aha moments. I know we're getting close to the end of the show. Early on in the first seminar I went through, we had a 30-hour seminar back in these things 23 years ago. And at the end, John Benson would go to Revelation 18, where it starts out, Babylon, O Babylon the Great, has fallen in an hour, and the merchants of the earth wail. And if you go down a little bit further, it gives a remedy section, by the way, serve her double what she served to you, etc., which means they've got to be a remnant because there's got to be a remnant to execute the remedy, correct?
Correct.
And then it goes down below that into a long list, 21, 22 items where the merchants wail because they can no longer sell their gold, their silver, their ivory, their cinnamon, their pearls, etc., right? And down there at the very last, it says, and bodies and souls of men.
Roger Sales, thank you so much for joining us on Red Pill Reports today.
It's been my pleasure, JD. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Look forward to having you back again. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Red Pills broadcast for today. That was Roger Sales, and we were speaking about all kinds of interesting things. We look forward to having him back in the future. Everyone check out his website, auspassportfored.com, and keep it here tomorrow. We'll be right back tomorrow.
According to a 2010 earnings report, Google earns nearly $80 million in a single day. On August 15, 2012, Google was fined $22 million by the FTC for illegally stealing your data. Google learned its lesson, right? Wrong. The very next day, in a show of arrogance, the Washington Post reported that Google employees rode tricycles around sacred Mayan ruins.
Because we know where you are, we know where you've been, we can more or less guess what you're thinking about.
Can you trust this megalomaniac with your personal information? Can you trust Google? With Microsoft's Bing, Steve Ballmer has personally ensured your privacy. He's even partnered with Facebook to keep you connected to your loved ones. Make the moral choice. Decide with Bing.
I'm Steve Ballmer, and I approve this message.